on. Agnes took the night off, so we may have a few fits and starts, a few stumbles, a few bumbles, but we'll get through it. 3 hours of jocularity, facts, and fun. How's that sound? Sounds good to me. I hope you'll stick around for it, and I hope I don't screw things up too entirely bad, but if I do, I'll trust in your indulgence. So, no small amount of stuff out there today. Let's see, did you catch the Dear Leader interview on, of course you didn't, you don't watch Fox. But, of course, but you can go to crooksandliars.com and watch it if you wish. It's better than sitting there and having to actually watch Fox on TV, you know, deliberately. Do they ever tell Dear Leader that there are words out there that he just doesn't want to use? In the interview, Britt Hume asks, and you know he's got the knee pads on, so you know what to expect. He asks Dear Leader what it is about his administration, the people in his office, and asks in particular about Rumsfeld. Rumsfeld, whom Dear Leader then says is doing, and this is one of those, please, just tell him. That, not that I'm a fan, but he says that Rummy is doing, and I quote, a heck of a job. You know, just like Brownie. A heck of a job. Oh, brother. Oh, brother. And, of course, Cheney's doing a heck of a job. Who else? Rove, we're just as close as we ever were. That was just a creepy little thing to hear. Again, crooksandliars.com has the video. You can go and look for it yourself. It was that I've cut so much Dear Leader sound in the last few days that I just didn't have the stomach for it today. It was beyond me. On the other hand, I did have the stomach for something else. I never cease to be amazed at ignorance and outright abject stupidity of Republicans. You know that. So it shouldn't have come as a surprise to me when I find out that a Republican member of the House of Representatives has proposed a resolution of the House supporting the, quote, symbols and traditions of Christmas. Oh, my God. Here we... The war on Christmas has reached the halls of Congress. Do you believe that? I mean, can you imagine that? Of course you can. We're dealing with Republicans who can't, you know, they can't deal with the real problems. Look at the deficit they gave us. And now they've got to run from it. So, I don't know. The thing could have come to a vote as today. Did it? I might have missed it. She's from this woman, Joanne Davis, is a congressman from Gloucester, Virginia. And she says that Christmas has been declared politically incorrect. Any sign or even mention of Christmas in public can lead to complaints, litigation, protests, and threats. America's favorite holiday is being twisted beyond recognition. God, I hate them. I do. I despise them. Everything she said there was an outright, abject, utter, complete, total lie. But, you know, so what? She's a Republican. She gets to lie. It's what they do. Her resolution, if adopted, would put the House on record as supporting the use of Christmas symbols and traditions while opposing attempts to ban references to Christmas. No one's banning Christmas. You know, we went through this last night with the O'Reilly out there just telling lies about schools banning the wearing of red and green. Dear God. But, you know, you can always count on John Dingell. God bless him. Good Democrat from Michigan. He had a response to Congresswoman Joanne Davis's resolution. He had a Jim Dandy response at that.
I have a little poem. 'Twas a week before Christmas, and all through the house, bills were passed about which Fox News could grouse. Tax cuts for the wealthy were passed with great cheer, so vacations in St. Bart's soon should be near. Katrina kids were all nestled snug in motel beds, while visions of school and homes danced in their heads. In Iraq, our soldiers need supplies and a plan, and nuclear weapons are being built in Iran. Gas prices shot up, consumer confidence fell. Americans feared we were in a fast track to, well, wait, we need a distraction, something divisive and wily, a fabrication straight from the mouth of O'Reilly. We will pretend Christmas is under attack, hold a vote to save it, and pat ourselves on the back. Silent night, first Noel, away in the manger. Wake up, Congress, they're in no danger. This time of year, we see Christmas everywhere we go, from churches to homes to schools, and yes, even Costco. What we have is an attempt to divide and destroy, when this is a season to unite us with joy. At Christmas time, we're taught to unite. We don't need a makeup reason to fight. So on O'Reilly, on Hannity, on Coulter, on those right-wing blogs, you should sit back and relax, have a few eggnogs. 'Tis the holiday season. Enjoy it a pinch. With all our real problems, do we really need another Grinch? So to my friends and my colleagues, I say with delight, a Merry Christmas to all. And to Bill O'Reilly, happy holidays. Ho, ho, ho. Merry Christmas.
Good on you, John Dingell. That takes a little bit of guts because the right wing will now attack him and call him everything except a human being for that. But he was a man of courage and he used humor like we talk about here. He used humor to make something stick. There's no attack on Christmas. That doesn't stop a Republican. You know, they're immune to truth, and you know that. So let's take a quick break. When we come back, a few other comments from Democratic members of the House on this stupid, phony war on the war on Christmas. This is Head On.
You put your keys between your knuckles. You walk in well-lit areas. Stay clear of parked vans. Someone approaches you and you cross to the other side of the street. Your cell phone is ready. The numbers for help saved on speed dial. You lock the door behind you. Once, twice, maybe three times. Now you feel safe, secure. You think you've made the right choices to protect yourself. Think again. Because if you're not making healthy choices, you could be one of the nearly 2 out of 3 women killed by cancer, diabetes, heart disease, or stroke. So eat right, get active, don't smoke, see your doctor, and live. Learn to protect yourself from yourself at 1-866-399-6789 or visit us at everydaychoices.org. A message from the American Cancer Society, American Diabetes Association, American Heart Association, and the Ad Council.
Hey, have you got a minute? I'm going to say a word. You tell me what comes to mind. Are you ready?
Okay.
Tchaikovsky.
Gesundheit. Okay, what's the word?
No, see, that is the word. What does Tchaikovsky make you think of?
I don't know. Allergy season?
Hey there, how you doing?
What's up?
Who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker.
No kidding.
Yeah, before her there was only soda crackers.
Hard to imagine. Hey, young lady.
Yeah?
Does the name Man Ray mean anything to you?
Duh. The man ray is a kind of poisonous jellyfish, and it lives in the Gulf of Mexico.
Aha. Uh-huh.
It's very deadly.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music, Martha Graham's dance, and Man Ray's photography. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Miners and mine operators understand the dangers inherent in working at a mine site. They also know how to avoid those hazards, but will they do it? Hello, I'm Bob Friend with the Mine Safety and Health Administration. Many recent fatalities in the mining industry have resulted from bad safety decisions. For example, one victim fell from an elevated platform because he was not wearing a safety line. Tragedies like this don't have to happen if everyone in the mining workplace thinks about the job and makes the right decision. Safety begins with you. If you're about to perform electrical work, lock out and tag out before you start the work. Make the right decision. If you're a truck driver, you can choose whether to wear the seat belt. Make the right decision. MSHA's message to you is make the right decision in the mining workplace. Decide to be safe. Thank you for listening.
Sticking around. This is a highly experimental evening, I must confess. After all, doing everything at one time is a little bit, shall we say, novel, so there will be some fits and starts along the way. But I think we can get through it. No, you heard John Dingle's little shot across the bow there, and it was a dandy. Merry Christmas to all, and to Bill O'Reilly, happy holidays. I wouldn't even go that far with Bill O'Reilly. But of course, you know, this is a beautiful example of the kind of war that our Constitution, you know, there's no war on Christmas, but there is damn sure a war on the Constitution, and in particular, the First Amendment separation between church and state. And it was brought home by, well, among other people, Gary Ackerman, a New York Democrat. He said, I'm offended by this, talking about Joanne Davis's hateful little resolution. I'm offended by this. You've drawn me out. Why not protect my symbols? You see, Ackerman is Jewish. Anthony Weiner, another New York Democrat, asked Davis to include other symbols of other holiday symbols in her resolution. Sorry, only Christmas, you Jew. You see how that... I tell you time and again what a gang of filthy racists these people are. I know. It's hard to reconcile the fact that that kind of racism still exists in the United States, but we better deal with it because it does. Joanne Davis is not worthy of being allowed in polite society. No, no, she only wants to protect Christmas symbols. Christian symbols. Can't protect anything. Can't protect a menorah. Mm-mm-mm-mm. No, 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 no. Star David? Sorry. Just the Christmas star. No, nobody else's. Just the Christmas star. The attack has not been on the menorah or any symbols of other religions, Davis said. There hasn't been any attack at all, Ms. Davis. So if you want to tie up her phone lines tomorrow, just letting her know what a freak she is, go right ahead. Or her fax machine. Or her email. There is a war on Christmas. My Christmas has been ruined by this. I hope my children, our children, I hope it hasn't sleezed over onto them. But this has absolutely ruined it for me. This business of now this, sure, I know, this is a political talk show. And we talk a lot of politics, and we talk a lot of social issues. And we talk about the attacks that are being mounted against the normal and the decent. You know, us. But there is no... I guess what gets under my skin is that there is no time, there is no season where these hateful, awful, evil people will not leave us alone. 4th of July, Christmas, Easter. It's all a political opportunity for them. And I say damn them for it. Just damn them. The attack has not been on the menorah. I will leave it as the resolution stands. And then she has the nerve to say, well, I didn't realize there would be some opposition, but apparently there is. Then Lynn Woolsey, Democrat, California, a Presbyterian, said, you can always tell when the right wing is in trouble. They invariably cook up some kind of culture war. That's the point. You know, people have said, you know, is there, you know, in the future, could there be another civil war in the United States? It ain't in the future. It's now. It's here. We just haven't gotten to the guns and bullets and knives and bombs and nastiness part. Wait a minute. Timothy McVeigh comes to mind. Of course, he was liberal, not. The war is here and the war is now. And I suppose, War knows no season and knows no bounds. But I tell you, it breaks my heart. You know, I sat around listening to a few Christmas carols. Trying to get a little bit of the spirit cooked up. It didn't work. Because this stuff is just ingrained. It's just scorched into me. Winter Wonderland, Bill O'Reilly. I mean that whole red and green and war on, you know. It hurts. It does. The only war on Christmas is the war these monsters are waging against us. Congressman Bobby Scott, Democrat from Newport News, said, what really needs to be protected is not the symbols of Christmas, but the spirit of Christmas. We ought to express our passion for Christmas through deeds and not words. And, Congresswoman Ginny Brown Waite, a Florida Republican, said, there is a war against Christmas.
Our children can't sing Christmas carols. They can only sing holiday tunes.
Really, lady? Why are you stopping your kids from singing Christmas carols? That's pretty cruel. That's pretty Scrooge-ish.
Our children can't sing Christmas carols. They can only sing holiday tunes.
Well, you know, you're a right-wing Christian lady, so, you know, at least they're not singing show tunes, okay? Oh, shame on me. Sorry about that. Okay, so maybe we're done with the war on Christmas. Can we be done with the war on Christmas? I would like that very, very much. And we'll find something else to babble about here in the break, after the break. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Sleigh bells ring, are you listening? In the lane, snow is glistening. A beautiful sight, we're happy tonight. Walking in the winter wonderland. Gone away is the bluebird. Here to stay is a new bird. He sings a love song as we go along. Walking in the winter wonderland.
Found out my jeans were made using child labor in sweatshops. I wrote a letter to the company saying, reconsider your labor practices. A few months later, I get a letter back saying, thanks for being a loyal customer, and they included a coupon for a 25% discount on their jeans. So I got smart, wrote letters every day to all the stores that carry the brand, asking them to stop supporting the companies who use child labor in sweatshops. And I just kept getting letters back, thanking me for my concerns, and more coupons for more discounts on more jeans. So I'm telling my friend about it, and she flips out, saying that between all the letters and coupons, some paper company cut down a small forest, driving off two indigenous tribes, hundreds of endangered animals, killing thousands of plant species, some of which may have contained vaccines for HIV, cancer, and syphilis. Meanwhile, the guys cutting down the trees are 13-year-old kids who will work night and day for months just to save up enough money to buy a pair of jeans made by child labor in sweatshops.
Saving the world isn't easy, but saving a life is. Just one pint of blood can save up to 3 lives. Visit bloodsaves.com to learn more. This public service announcement was brought to you by the Ad Council.
When you have a stroke, you may not even notice it right away. But then, time passes, and the symptoms get worse. 1 minute you feel fine, and the next, your speech could be slurred or not make sense. One side of your body might become numb. You might see double. You drop the TV remote because you can't hold up your arm. That's because after a stroke, every minute you don't get help is another minute that your brain is being starved of oxygen. The warning signs of a stroke include sudden numbness or weakness of the face, arm, or leg, sudden trouble seeing, speaking, or understanding. If you experience any of these warning signs, call 911 immediately, because time lost is brain lost. Visit strokeassociation.org or call 1-888-4-STROKE today. A public service announcement from the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
It came upon the midnight clear, that glorious song of old, from angels.
Welcome back. Okay, see, I tried. A couple of Christmas gifts. You know, and it's just pathetic that Republican woman in Florida won't let her children sing those. That it's just awful. We are joined right now on the phone by Brian Fleming. Brian, are you with us? You there, Brian?
I am here.
Hey, thanks for joining us. Brian I'll do a little legwork on the front end. You are the creator of a documentary?
We shall.
Okay, The God Who Wasn't There. Is that correct?
That's the name of it.
Okay, and you're not necessarily a religious scholar or a religious investigator. This is an examination of Christian ethos or Christian, what, hagiography?
It's a very hard look at Christianity. It shines a very bright light on Christian history and on the nature of Christianity today.
And it's when was it released?
It was released theatrically. It had its premiere in San Francisco in May, and then other theaters in June, and it's been out on DVD for a while now.
Let's do that part first. How can folks get hold of the movie?
You can go to thegodmovie.com to buy it, or you can go to Netflix to rent it.
Okay, wonderful. What made you want to examine Christianity?
I have some past experience with Christianity. I grew up a fundamentalist Christian. Kind of had the doctrine pounded into me mercilessly when I was young. I went to a fundamentalist Christian school. And once I got out of that school and started thinking, I quickly became an atheist because I think that's the only place you can really end up once you start thinking about religion. And ultimately, I decided to kind of take a look at this religion that had such a big influence on me when I was younger.
Well, I can sympathize with what you say because I describe myself as a recovering Southern Baptist. This is some pretty strong stuff in the video. You've come to the conclusion that there's every likelihood that Jesus didn't even exist. Is that right?
Yeah, I don't think it's very likely that Jesus existed. If you look at the early Christians and what they believe, they don't seem to have believed in a real walking human Jesus. The whole idea of Jesus being a historical person, this is an attribute that was added decades and even centuries later after Jesus was supposed to have lived. At the very beginning of Christianity, he was a similar god to the other savior cults of the time.
Mithra, that kind of thing.
What's that? Yeah, Mithra, Attis. There were a lot. It was a very popular thing back then in the first century, these savior cults. People would join many of them. And the Christ cult was really just one of them. It was a Jewish version of these other savior cults that were very popular. And none of these religions had a figure who was a recent historical person. That would have been considered ridiculous, that whole genre of religion. Their gods lived up in a mythical realm that was halfway between where the Father God lived and this dirty place called Earth. And that's where the Christ Jesus of Paul and the other early Christians, that's where their Christ was. And that's why Paul never mentions anything that you or I would call the story of Jesus. He doesn't know about Mary or Jerusalem.
No virgin birth.
Any of that stuff.
Yeah, no virgin birth. It all happens for Paul on the cross.
That's right. Up, he only knows that Jesus was put on a cross, died, and through that sacrifice saved us, and then he ascended up to his Father, which is the same exact story that all of these other religions without historical savior gods also have.
Yeah, going all the way back to Osiris, I believe.
Yes, yeah, they go back a long time. Well, the whole story goes back very, very far.
Well, that being with that as prologue, the only question I had regarding that line of reasoning that you put forward, what about the historical references in Josephus?
Well, the main one that's usually cited is widely considered to be a forgery, or better known as it's an interpolation. It was something that was added in the middle of a real Josephus document, but it interrupts the flow of that document, and it's so clearly outside of what Josephus, a Jew, would have written. You know, he's praising Jesus as if he's the Messiah, which contradicts everything we know about Josephus. This can't really be considered a good reference, and in fact, the nature of that it came so late, that it is a forgery, and it's the very best Christians have, that is extremely telling. That tells you all you need to know right there about how historical Jesus really is.
The ossuary box that was in the news a year or so ago. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, they're going to be discovering these things forever. I mean, this has been a trend in Christianity for a very long time. You find the original bones of Christ, or they found so many pieces of the true cross, you could really build a city out of them. This is going to, no doubt this will keep happening, you know, just like, you know, statues of Mary will bleed from the eyes and that sort of thing. I really don't pay any attention to it, and I don't think any person who really cares about, you know, finding the facts will pay much attention to that kind of stuff.
Well, for the early Christians, and I'm sure there are some people who will be intrigued and move to see your film. I hope so, at least. I can't wait to see it myself. What was the nature, if there was no real historical Christ or Jesus, Yeshua, whatever, what was the nature of the early worship?
Well, it was very much like all of the other savior cults. It was kind of a mystery religion, and there's some things we don't know about it because the Roman Church was so thorough in eradicating. I mean, they just literally killed the people who were representatives of this early Christianity and the other religions that were like early Christianity. So there aren't a lot of, you know, exact narratives of here's what happened in our ceremonies and that sort of thing. But it was largely the communion ceremony as the whole ceremony. It was you drank the Savior's blood and you ate the Savior's flesh, and this cannibalistic ritual, this symbolic cannibalistic ritual, would help you to commune with that Savior God who was still right up there in that mythical realm, and you could touch him, and or you couldn't touch him, but you could touch him spiritually through eating his flesh and drinking his blood. It's a very, you know, sort of visceral ceremony that they had.
That's reminiscent. Was it the Mithra cult that involved the bulls and the slaughter and the blood drinking?
That's right. Yeah, baptism of blood. They would. I believe that they would. I'm not an expert on Mithra, but I believe they would slash open a bull, and you would be drenched in the blood of the bull.
Washed in the blood.
Yes, that's right.
So when it was sanctioned by Rome, is it just a polyglot conglomeration of Roman religious practice with maybe some Hebrew temple ceremony? Is that how we get to where we are?
Yeah, they sort of improvised their way and made deals and took from other religions and did whatever they. I mean, the Christianity we get is just kind of cobbled together by the, you know, incidents of history and the political situations at any given time and the desires of any particular leader. It's just this sort of. It's this path where it's perfectly natural that it would develop this way, like the same way that a story develops. Like if you tell somebody a story and then you hear it a year later, it's completely changed.
Right.
That's Christianity essentially in a nutshell. It just changed and grew. And I mean, at no point was factual accuracy in any way whatsoever important to anybody who created Christianity. It was always political power, or you know, it was always, you know, delusions in some cases where people would have dreams and that sort of thing.
And so you get the Roman hierarchy with the Pontifex Maximus, which was a civil as much as civil as religious position in ancient Rome. You marry in a little bit of Jewish temple practice. A lot of, you know, if you watch Midnight Mass coming up soon from Rome. A lot of the vestments actually, it's my understanding, go back to Jewish temple practice. The Jews themselves borrowed from the Egyptians, from the Sumerians. Is it just a fundamental need inside human beings? Is it because we're afraid we're alone in the universe? Where does it come from?
Yeah, I don't know where this desire to, you know, create these ceremonies almost always involving some kind of real sacrifice or symbolic sacrifice, and always involving violence in some way, and you know, the suffering of this character would be essential to your salvation. And you know, in every, you know, religion, it seems when you look at them, even ones that never had any communication with each other, there's a father killing his son in some way, or putting his son somewhere to be killed, and that's Christianity right there in a nutshell. It's about a father killing his son. I don't know where all this darkness comes from that expresses itself in religion, but it definitely does seem to be in us. We have something in us that makes us express our dark impulses through religious ceremony.
Well, you said early on that, you know, right out there, you know, you're an atheist, you don't believe any of it, and you know that term, atheist, you know, which we understand means non-God person, basically, is just cloaked in a desire to people treat that word as if it is equated with evil. Is it possible for a person to not believe in God and yet manifest? And I this is kind of a softball.
I can see it coming.
Yeah, and yet manifest decency and compassion and love for fellow man. Is that realistic?
Yeah. I'll say a couple of things about that. I think Sam Harris puts it best. I'm going to paraphrase him. Sam Harris wrote this book called The End of Faith, which is one of the greatest books that's out right now on the subject of religion. He won the Penn Award for it, and he's in The God Who Wasn't There. You can see him if you get the DVD. Sam Harris says atheism is not a philosophy. It is not even a worldview. Atheism is simply a refusal to deny the obvious. And that's all it really is. I don't identify myself as an atheist. I don't like wake up and try to go do atheist things. Atheism just means
there's no atheist church.
What's that?
There's no atheist church.
No, there's no atheist church. It just means, in the same way that I don't believe in the Easter Bunny, I don't believe in any other kind of fictional fantasy characters that have been invented or fictional fantasy ideas about how the world operates. I just don't deny the obvious, and religion is essentially a denial of the obvious and a replacement with a fantasy. So that's all atheism is. It isn't in and of itself an agenda or a worldview or anything like that. There are organizations that stand up for the civil rights of atheists, but you know, that's just because it's necessary in this world right now to have organizations like that, because civil rights of atheists do, you know, get denied. But secondly, you were asking if an atheist can be a moral person or an ethical
right.
person. I actually think it's more difficult if you're religious and you subscribe to some kind of magical book, whether it's the Bible or the Quran or whatever your magical book is, where you're not allowed to question what's in that book and you have to do what the authorities tell you from that book. If you've suspended your own sense of right and wrong and replaced it with a book and that you have to do what that book says, you are not free to be a moral person. You are not free to be an ethical person. I am. I don't believe that a magical book tells me what to do. I can decide right and wrong for myself. And an example of a magical book leading people to do immoral things would be the gross mistreatment of gay people by Christians. I think a lot
Absolutely.
Of Christians are just really good people, and they would never, ever look down on their fellow citizens and try to discriminate against their fellow citizens unless this book said they had to, or an authority figure interpreted this book and told them they had to. So that's an example of a Christian not being able to be the good person that Christian could be if they could get rid of the dogma that they believe in.
Now, if there was no historical Jesus, are the sayings in the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, is it all just made up, or does it come from other texts that we're not aware of? How did it go down?
Well, the Bible's like a lot of literature. It has many, many influences on it. I mean, Shakespeare didn't come from, you know, the stuff that he wrote didn't come from just, you know, one place. It had a lot of influences on it. Mark was the first gospel, and it was written, you know, roughly somewhere between 40 and 70 years after the supposed death of Jesus. And it looks for all the world that Mark was writing an allegory, that he didn't believe in the real Jesus either. He believed in this mythical Jesus, and he wrote an allegorical tale about him. And people who would be in these savior cults, they would just love, love, love the central, you know, whether it was Mithras or Attis or whatever, and they would just want to meditate upon that person and write about them and share, you know, any kind of revelations that they had during their meditation. And that's kind of what Mark is doing in the Gospel of Mark. And then later, the Gospels that were in later than that, Matthew and Luke and John, which is partially based on Mark, but also, you know,
right.
the most unique of the Gospels, they started just adding in other details to try to, you know, flesh out the story a little bit and say, oh, well, why don't we have the guy be born? Well, he should be born in a manger because a lot of other heroes were born in a manger. And that's how it got kind of cobbled together.
And there was,
what felt right.
And there was, of course, the treasure trove of Old Testament prophecy to be mined to sort of wedge the figure into the messianic movement of the times.
Yeah. There's a concept called Midrash, and I'm not an expert on Midrash, but essentially the process of Midrash is a Christian, an early Christian, would meditate upon Old Testament scriptures, receive revelation from that process, and then write a story. And that's why Jesus fulfills prophecies, is because they use the Old Testament to write many parts of the story of Jesus. So naturally, you would find that, you know, this character would be quote unquote fulfilling prophecy.
What about the people who are said to have lived and worked with Jesus? Equally mythological?
Well, certainly Pontius Pilate was real. You know, there are certain the New Testament is essentially a bit like a historical novel, you know, not a new genre at that time either. It has fictional characters that are mixed up into historical settings, and the settings become more historical the later the literature gets.
But, for instance, Mary Magdalene.
It's pretty clear that Mary is, that the two Marys, and there's sometimes three Marys, are influenced heavily by mythology of other texts.
Okay, so it
you kind of need to have some Marys in your savior stories.
Okay, well, Isis with Osiris and little baby Horus, sure. Now, what I mean, you've got the background. You were raised in fundamentalist religion. This country is, it's been my thesis, Brian, that this country is under attack by religious fundamentalists. How can I put this? Where do you come down in that war, and where do you come down on the fundamentalists now?
Well, I do think that religious fundamentalism is an extremely dangerous force, and people who think that they just should be tolerant of what fundamentalists are doing, or they don't want to touch the whole idea of religion because it seems a little scary. I think, especially liberals seem to be that way a lot. It's like, oh, well, we don't want to go there. They're religious, so they get to do or say whatever they want. I think we need to end that. We can't let people step into the public square, say crazy things, claim to have some kind of spiritual justification for these crazy things, then turn them into policy. And that's what we're letting happen because they're being so arrogant and they're being so aggressive. And so partly what I do is I try to be as confrontational as I can. I've declared war on Christmas, and I go out with volunteers for my movie, and we hand out the movie at these religious events that have been forced into the public square, and let people know, Jesus didn't even exist. So, if you're gonna force this proselytizing and this conversion, strategy into the public square, and then start making all these declarations about your religion, we're gonna be there, and we're going to, offer the counter argument.
Well, and that leads into, so what do you do for Christmas?
My family celebrates Christmas. I go with my parents and then my brother and then his family, and we celebrate Christmas. And I don't have any problem with it whatsoever. I enjoy Christmas quite a bit, actually.
Yeah, because it all centers on the winter solstice, which is it's a physical event. It can be measured, quantified, whatever.
Christmas is a relatively new iteration of it. I mean, if you're a traditionalist, you should not be celebrating Christmas. Christmas is very new in the history of winter celebrations. The exact same thing was celebrated, called by different names, well before the Jesus Christ story was made up.
Saturnalia, Yule.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. I mean, if you're going to be a traditionalist, you shouldn't be celebrating Christmas. You're being newfangled, frankly.
Well, the Puritans outlawed Christmas 30 years almost in Boston, wasn't it?
Yeah, you could get in trouble with the law in early America for celebrating Christmas. Yeah, it was it wasn't just frowned upon; it was actually, you could get punished for it.
Yeah, in the stocks, stuff thrown at you, that route.
Yeah.
What else is on your? By way of letting people know that you're a multifaceted person. What else is on your resume?
My previous credit of note is probably the musical Bat Boy, the musical that I co-wrote. And that was a musical about the half-bat, half-boy that was invented by the Weekly World News.
Yeah, Robin the Bat Boy, from West Virginia, no less.
Yes, from West Virginia, that's right. And we rewrote the tragic life story of Bat Boy and made it as a musical that went to New York and London and a few other places. And you can see it at high schools now. It's out in the, so look for one at a high school near you.
Oh, that would be marvelous. Well, Brian, it's been a fascinating conversation. I appreciate your joining us this evening. Again, thegodmovie.com, and you can credit cards, cash, checks. Is any limit on what you'll take or not take?
Oh, whatever you've got.
Sounds good to me.
They'll take it there. Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much, Brian.
All right.
And
have a
happy solstice.
And you have a Merry Christmas.
All right, same to you. Bye now. Thanks. Brian Fleming, of producer, director, creator of the film The God Who Wasn't There, a documentary examining whether or not there was a historic Jesus Christ. I encourage you to see it. Because, again, regardless of what your particular faith is, finding out more about that faith is it's not detrimental. It's actually beneficial. What's the old the short story by Mark Twain? The Man Who Corrupted Hadleyburg. Hadleyburg is a town, and a stranger comes to it. And their motto is, "Lead us not into temptation." It's right there on the town seal. But by the end of the book, end of the story, it's a rather, I guess you could almost call it a novella. By the end of that, you can after all the events that unfold, the motto is changed to, "Lead us into temptation. Because it's only in the absence of questioning that, you know, that, okay, here we go. A majority of people didn't question Hitler. A majority of people didn't question Mussolini. And you see where that gets you. In Kansas, and now apparently in South Carolina, thanks to our friend David in South Carolina, the culture wars over the teaching of evolution. And it's a matter of teaching what's real. You know, believe what you wish to believe, but for God's sakes, keep it out of the reality rooms. What becomes of a nation that stops trying to innovate, that stops seeking, stops questioning, stops questing? What becomes of that nation? It becomes a nation of superstition and fear. And, you know, what Brian Fleming said is very much correct. The bigotry that arises... Is there anybody out there who hates the gays for any reason other than the religious bigotry that is prated and prattled out of an interpretation of something in a 4,500-year-old collection of mythologies and histories? No. Again, what Brian said was very, very trenchant. If people weren't using that book to justify their hatred and their bigotry, one may well argue that we would live and let live and leave each other be. How many wars have been started in the name of God, Jesus, Muhammad, Allah, any number of the members of the Hindu pantheon? Compare that, then, with the numbers started by agnostics. Let's go to the phones. I have no idea who's here, so we'll just have to play it by ear. You're head on. That book. Hello.
Hello, I'd like to speak to Bob, please.
This is Bob.
Oh, Bob.
How you doing?
That's pretty good. You're talking, but I'm hearing you on the radio. Okay, it must be the time delay. But how you doing tonight, Bob?
I'm doing okay. It's not just the delay. I'm behind the board too. Agnes took the night off.
Oh, I see. Okay. Oh, that's really you two people tonight, huh?
Yeah, and I need about three more arms.
Yeah, I hear that. So are we on the air right now?
Yes, you are.
Oh, okay. I must say that your guest did not impress me too much.
Why is that?
Well, for one thing, he says he's come to the conclusion there was no Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, that flies in the face of just too many historical accounts.
That's just
absolute insanity is what this guy's talking about.
Well, not really. Which historical account? I mean, the historical account that's most frequently cited, Gary, is that of Josephus.
Well, maybe we can just deny there was Julius Caesar. There's all kinds of historical figures.
But he addressed that, Gary. He said Pontius Pilate was clearly real. You could go on. Felix, to whom before whom Saul of Tarsus is brought, was real. And as he noted, if you're writing in a historical context, you're going to use some of the historical figures. You know, there's a reference to the birth taking place during the reign of Caesar Augustus. Caesar Augustus was very clearly real. But this is a matter of belief. And people are going to believe what they're going to believe, but there is little or no historical reference to an actual living Jesus Christ.
Well, you can believe that if you want, Bob.
Well, no, it's not belief, Gary, you see.
Fact. It's not fact.
Well, tell me where the historical references are.
If you go back into your ancient writers, I'm sure you'll find them, Bob.
They're not there. I'm up to my neck.
You're telling me that somehow or another, a few people concocted this fantasy, and they've been able to convince maybe a billion people now that have lived and died that this really went on.
No, that's his thesis, yeah. You know,
well, you know,
I'm looking.
The guy that says there wasn't a Holocaust either, but you know.
Well, no, there are historical references to the Holocaust. There
well,
are historical
memory too.
There are historical. There are historical witnesses to it. You see,
some of the things get away from you. They're easy there. They are to deny, but hey, if that's what the guy wants to believe, I mean, hey, more power to him. I think.
Well, I find it interesting. You know, he wasn't raised by a bunch of raving atheists.
Yeah.
He was raised. He was raised in Pentecostal fundamentalism, and it just it got to the point with him where he couldn't buy into it anymore.
Well, you get a lot of people that they have a bad experience and they just totally turn the other way. They just essentially almost lose their mind. It's just like they found a lot of these here serial killers. You know, the guys that go out and kill women. Well,
yeah.
Maybe their mother mistreated him or something, and then after that they have to go out and try to eliminate every woman on earth, you know.
Well,
I think it's kind of a case of that where maybe he had some bad experiences with his religion, and after that maybe subconsciously decided he was just going to try to eliminate it altogether.
Well, could it be instead that not necessarily bad experiences, but through the process of education and analysis, that he came to the conclusion that he could not any longer believe what he did not believe could be reasonably supported?
Well, I mean, I don't know why he'd say it couldn't be reasonably supported. You know, I'm not a preacher, and I'm not really the best guy to make these arguments. I know what I do believe. I do know that...
But that's the thing, Gary. You at least have enough common sense, and I mean that as a compliment and certainly no insult. You've got enough common sense to acknowledge that what you're doing is believing. It's the people who can't tell belief from knowledge that are the trouble. What?
You haven't insulted me for a while. I'm ready for it.
But sincerely, you're able to separate out belief from knowledge.
Well, you know, I'm happy for anybody to have any kind of belief that they want to have. If this guy wants to believe that, I'm comfortable with it. If you want to believe in the big purple pumpkin or whatever you want, I'm not out to, you know, burn you at the stake because that's what you believe. But, I mean, I don't think that you're crazy. But, you know, that's your choice.
Well, and the trick here is see the film. Reach your own conclusions.
Well, you know, I don't know about that, Bob.
It's rentable through, as he said, through Netflix. I'm looking forward to seeing it myself. But we are up against the break, Gary. Always good talking to you.
Nice talking to you, Bob.
Take care. And a quick break, and we'll be back. This is Head On. You know who I am. Do I know who I am? I'm Bob Kincaid.
See a billion roads leading there. The higher each road goes, the closer they all come, till they all come together. And they're all one, but everybody got a wall. Everybody's got to walk.
Eric Estrada here. Just like you, I'm really into engines, but there's something else that I'm into even more. Taking care of the planet. I bet you didn't know that motor oil from one oil change dumped in a drain or on the ground can contaminate 1 million gallons of fresh water. That means that if we don't recycle it, we could be drinking it. So take your used oil to your nearest recycling center or call toll-free 1-800-CLEANUP. Remember, if you dump it, you'll drink it.
Want to fight childhood asthma? Then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes
before they pile up in the sink and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org, because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her. Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back to Hour 2 with Bob. Agnes couldn't leave him alone for long.
This gets under your skin. This is as addictive as China White. You think, Bob, you handle it. I'm going to take the night off and go fry some shrimp or something. But she heard me in here floundering like an amputee octopus. Because this really is, if you're trying to do everything at once, it's a pretty miserable affair. And bless her little heart, she canceled her vacation day and came back in here.
I love him. I couldn't leave him to do this by himself.
Oh. I think I loaded some Frank Sinatra into the music library. You want to get some of that going, dear? I'm kidding. Let's go straight to the phones. Joe's with us. Hey, Joe, you're head on. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, Bob.
How you doing?
How you doing? I like saying hi, Bob. It reminds me of the old drinking game.
Oh, and many a game of that I've played.
I was listening to the show tonight, and you started, and I've been talking on and off about the whole Christmas thing, and it really, really kind of pisses me off. Can I say that?
Yeah, you can say that.
Okay.
Because it does me, too.
I want to tell you a Christmas story, if I can.
Go ahead.
Last year, I got laid off from my job just before Christmas of last year. And then my wife came down sick with diabetes. Well, she had like a hospital appointment, and I found out her blood sugar had gone through the roof. So they hospitalized her, and just to keep, you know, just to make sure her blood sugar stayed normal and stable until they can release her with all the insulin and stuff that she needed. And we actually spent Christmas in her hospital room. Just the two of us, we sat and we talked and we held hands and we watched Christmas stuff on TV. And, you know, it was one of the best Christmases either of us had ever had. And we both talked about it later because there wasn't any pressure of, you know, who's going to give the most expensive gift or anything, because we were broke anyway. We couldn't afford to give each other gifts.
Mm-hmm.
It was just us two together. And I don't want to say it's a shame that it was her last Christmas, because as my listeners know, my wife passed away a little while ago.
Right.
But, you know, I would have liked to have given her a Christmas. We could have had the whole big family thing with a lot of relatives and a lot of food and all that stuff. But we were happy with what we had there. It was just us together. And what really angers me with what O'Reilly and Fox News and Falwell and all of these people are doing is that they're ruining everything about this for me.
Yes, I'm glad I'm, and you know, this has got a Thanksgiving, Christmas, and I know what you went through. This has got to be a hellish season for you, and to have this is just piling on.
So it just, there's not even any real point to it except that they want more money and power than they already have. I mean, how much more money does Jerry Falwell want? How much more money does Bill O'Reilly want? I'd be happy to give it to him if they just shut up and leave us the heck alone.
Yes.
You know, and you know, it just, I'm not a Christian. I don't consider myself to be a Christian. In fact, I'm an agnostic. And the only arguments my wife and I ever seriously had were over religion, because she considers herself to be a Christian. But
mm-hmm.
I always take a logical, rational point of view when it comes to matters of faith, matters of spirituality. I'm an agnostic because I don't believe in extremes one way or the other, at least, you know, unless there's absolute proof. And since you can't prove the existence of something as unknowing as an all-powerful being, you know, I accept that the possibility is there that such a creature exists, although it probably doesn't take the same form that we know. As to whether or not Jesus existed at all, I don't know if I want to get into that argument with that guy or not. While there's certainly no actual evidence, I mean, you know, you can say that about a lot of people. Jesus may have been one of many small philosophers that went around and that people just jumped up on later on.
That's true. And there's a scene. Do you remember the hell on earth that was created when the film The Last Temptation of Christ came out?
Oh yeah, actually I do remember that. They were going crazy over it because it was a left wing version of it.
There's a scene in there, and it's one of the hallucinations that he has when he's up on the cross, and St. Paul comes to him and says, "Look, we would have made, if even, because he's, Christ is thinking about, you know, what if I hadn't chosen this path? What if I'd just been a normal guy?" And St. Paul says, "Look, we would have created you anyway."
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I don't necessarily know that I come down with, entirely in Mr. Fleming's camp either. However, look, we've got George Washington chopping down the cherry tree, okay? And that was passed off as fact. And we know that it's hokum. And throwing money across rivers and things like and that's 200 years ago, Joe.
And the origins of baseball, the same way.
Right.
Abner Doubleday, I mean, they've actually proven that there's no possible way that could have happened. But you know what? It's a nice story, and we like it, and we stick with it, even though we know it's not true. And I'm happy celebrating the Christmas season.
The at least theoretical basis for it is tolerable. I'm not talking about the virgin birth. I'm talking about somebody who came along in a very violent world with a very radical message, a radical liberal message, no less, love thy neighbor.
I wish Christians would take that more into consideration. But, they use it like a Chinese menu. You know, they choose whatever from column A and whatever from column B
right.
that they decide to use.
And 9 times out of 10, and I think Brian Fleming was correct in this, Joe, it's a cover for bigotry more times than it is a guidebook for a well-lived life.
Oh, sure. Just another excuse. Although I do want to disagree on one point. I think even if religion did not exist, we'd still find an excuse to kill each other in a war or something like that. I think that's just human nature, the way we are. We're very territorial.
Yeah, killer chimps.
Yeah. So I want to tell another interesting story, if I may.
Go ahead.
When I was in the military, I was based in Misawa, Japan, and which is in the northern part of Japan, just south of the island of Hokkaido. And there's a little place not far from Misawa where the people there claim to have buried Jesus Christ, that Jesus Christ was actually buried there.
Really?
He lived many years in Japan. Their story is, and I'm not vouching for the truth of it in any way, shape, or form. I'm not saying it is true, although if it is true, I would say I wouldn't be surprised to find out it was. But their theory was that it wasn't Jesus that was hung on the cross, it was his brother, which would explain the resurrection thing. If Jesus wasn't really hung on the cross, then he could have showed up 3 days later, right?
Right.
And what Jesus did was he went to the east, which is where he went for a long time anyway to study many of his philosophies. What is it, like a 30-year stretch in the Bible or an 18-year stretch?
Yeah, from age 12 to age 30.
Yeah, okay.
And in fact, there is some supposition or speculation out there that he matches up rather nicely time-wise with the Hindu prophet Issa,
mm-hmm.
and it's philologically close to it as well. And that Issa was driven back out of India for his heretical preachings and teachings.
Well, you know, anybody who changes, who threatens the status quo, right?
Right.
But the thing about it is, according to the story, he went back not just to India, but he went further east and wound up in Japan where he lived and raised a family. And, you know, just lived a normal life and passed away, and they have his grave there. That's their story.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess they're sticking with it. But I think it's interesting how these ideas propagate. And when you don't have any cold, hard facts behind anything, it's easy to just make up stuff. I mean, you know, hell, people make up stuff about Elvis.
Up in Michigan or off on Mars.
And I'm sure that there are people who are out there praying to Elvis. I mean, not many perhaps, but there weren't that many probably praying to Jesus in the days when he walked. You know what I mean?
Well, you get the idea. I mean, if you take as factual his pronouncements, you know, in the red letter portions of the Gospels, he would have had a fit if someone had prayed to him.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, you know, Buddha said, "Never don't build statues to me either." So, you know, what people do after they die. Well,
right.
George Carlin had a great bit about that. He was talking about when people die, people will bend over backwards to say nice things about him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, say, "Well, he was a real jerk, but he meant well." You know,
yeah.
You know, is this what about Bob? Bob is still alive. You know, I can't stand him. What about Jack? Oh, Jack is still alive. I can't. Or Jack? You know, Jack is dead. Oh, he was a wonderful guy. Jack is dead. And then they go, You know, Sam, that SOB is still alive, isn't he? I wish he died so we could like him.
Right.
You know, and I see people do that, and it's the same kind of psychology, and all this stuff gets built up around it. You know, I was raised Catholic, and I never really, you know, there were times when I liked going to church, but as I grew older, I realized I wasn't getting anything out of it. It was all ritual.
Yeah.
And the only things that I did enjoy were the little Bible readings where they talked about how Jesus was doing nice things. And, you know, and when I moved down to the South, we moved down to Florida first before I moved up to here to Atlanta. But, you know, Jesus wouldn't wear no Rolex. Jesus wouldn't wear no three-piece suit.
No.
And what these guys are doing is like what the Pharisees did. It's all, what do they call it, horizontal prayer versus vertical prayer?
Yeah.
This is all horizontal prayer. The prayer meetings after school, the wanting to get it into schools, the doing it at football games. You know, that's all just designed to push their religion on other people, to intimidate other people into believing what they believe, and to just to make a public showing of it.
Well, and the fact of the matter is, the very people that the Dobsons, Falwells, Robertsons, et al., the very people that they despise are the people that Jesus hung out with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the poor, the publicans, the sinners, the prostitutes. You know, I'm sure there were gay people in what we know there were gay people then that he hung out with.
Well, you know what's funny? What's that other guy's name? The guy who goes to the places with little kids holding a sign that says "God hates fags."
Oh yeah, Fred Phelps.
Fred Phelps. Yeah. Now, the one line in the Bible that they talk about most is that the Leviticus.
Yeah.
Where he says, man laying with man, that's an abomination. But he also says that if you eat any fish, anything in the ocean that's not a fish, that's also an abomination.
And
it's the same phraseology.
Right. And for people who have allegedly been to school to study this book, Joe, they don't even understand that Leviticus is called Leviticus because it was a set of rules for the Levites, who were in fact the priestly class of the ancient Hebrews. Those are rules for that's a subset of rules for a subset of a people.
They see, I didn't even know that. I'm not an expert on the Bible. I don't claim to be an expert on the Bible, but I know BS when I see it.
Yeah, right.
And I just see people acting so hypocritically, and I can't imagine. I absolutely cannot imagine that Jesus, whoever he was, whether he existed or not, and I kind of sort of do believe he exists, and I kind of sort of want to believe he exists, even if I don't think he did,
yeah,
because I like a lot of the things that he had to say. I cannot imagine he would in any way, shape, or form be with these people.
No.
You know, because as far as I'm concerned, they're an abomination.
Well, yeah, and these people that we talk about so much, Joe, the Dobsons and so forth, if you want to really get down and be kind of fundamentalist crazy and go in for all the prophecy and so forth, these are the false prophets of whom we are warned.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are the people, you know, miracles will be done in my name, you know, that kind of thing. They're the monsters. These are the people who are, you know, broad as the path. These are the people who are leading people down that path. And, you know, when you're willing to support yourself by taking little old lady Social Security checks, my guess is you're already damned.
Yes, I think so. And I really, you know, I don't know what kind of afterlife there is, or even if there is an afterlife at all, but I do know this. If when I die, I wake up and I see, you know, Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson and all those other people looking back at me, I don't know where they think they are, but I know I'll be in hell.
That's exactly,
you know what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you mean.
I cannot imagine spending 10 minutes with these people, never mind an eternity.
Yeah, and if it turns out it's heaven, you're asking for a transfer.
You know,
there's that old joke, Joe, where you can pick your religious sect. When I was growing up in North Alabama, we told it about the members of the Church of Christ, that a couple of people died, went to the pearly gates. Peter's leading them around through heaven, you know, over. Just two people died. But they're being led, you know, there's the Baptists, they wave, the Baptists wave. There's the Catholics, they wave, the Catholics wave. There's the Presbyterians, you know. And finally, and over there is the Church of Christ, and the people get ready to wave, and Peter slaps their hands and says, shh, don't do that. They think they're the only ones up here.
Yeah. I've heard many different versions of that.
Right. But that's, you know, that's these people. You know, and you know, war on Christmas, phooey. There's a war on us. There's a war on normal. There's a war on decent.
I mean, it's so obvious. I don't understand why people don't see that. It's such an obvious plea for attention by the O'Reillys and the Falwells. And, it couldn't be any more crass. I mean, can you go anywhere in this country without being hit with something Christmas at this time of year?
I was in Rite Aid, Joe, and it was mid-October. The Halloween stuff wasn't gone, and they were putting up the Christmas goods.
Yeah. You know, and I don't necessarily see anything wrong with it, although, like a lot of people, I don't really care much when it's overly commercialized, or they just make it into a big, you have to spend every cent you have in order to buy people presents.
I've often thought that I would like to go during the Christmas season sometime to the British Isles and see a traditional English Christmas or what I envision to be a tradition.
Basically the same. I mean, I don't know how much more they are about that than we are. I mean, they're still Christians after all. So, and they do have their share of fundamentalists out there.
Oh, sure they do. But I mean, you know, or go somewhere, you know, where there's caroling and wassail and 12 days of it, and you get my meaning. I love the holiday that they have in Canada and in in England, Boxing Day, the day after Christmas.
Oh, yeah, 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 where the servants switch with the masters.
I don't know about that angle, but just the idea that there's a day after Christmas celebration where, you know, you're cleaning up and you party and you have a little fun and, you know, just because, you know, Christmas, if you've got kids, Christmas is over at, you know, 9:15 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, it's just another day that the stores aren't open.
And when I was in Japan, I went Christmas shopping in Japan because they don't celebrate Christmas there. But I went Christmas shopping on Christmas Day once in Japan.
Oh, that had to be a little strange.
Yeah, well, all the stores are open, and it's, you know, New Year's is a big deal to them.
Right.
New Year's is a big deal to them, and they have their religious summer festivals every year. And actually, those are much more interesting. I thought, you know, growing up Catholic, all of our festivals are basically kind of these really sad, you know, please don't make God angry or he'll kill all of us type of deal.
Yeah.
And but their thing now, you know, the Japanese are mainly Shinto and Buddhist, and Shinto is the original religion. It's a very ancient religion.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of tree spirits and
family cult and
yeah, that sort of thing. And what they do is they take the god of the local area. He's in this little shrine there, and they take him out and they parade him around the town and show him a good time. And so everybody gets drunk, a little drunk, and they all have, like, you know, food on the sides and stuff like that, all different Japanese foods, and everybody dances in the street. I'm sure you've seen, like, the big drums that they play.
Oh, yeah.
That's where those, you know, that's where those are primarily used in these big summer festivals. And I thought it was wonderful. I mean, you know, I'm not a Shintoist and I'm not a Buddhist, but I think it's real nice that people can actually have a little fun with the belief, you know, instead of all this, oh, my God, we're all going to die type of stuff that we always get from, you know, whether you're talking about a Catholic or whether you're talking about a Baptist or anybody else. And I'll say this for the Catholics, as bad off as they are, they do a lot more for poor people than pretty much any of the non-Catholic churches, Protestant churches.
Well, that's why I've said in some of my past ravings about the so-called right to life movement, for instance, I can stomach it a lot more from the Catholic Church than I can from just about anybody else, because, you know, they're cradle to grave.
Right.
You know, they don't want to end it before it can start, and they don't want to end it before it happens naturally. I don't agree with any of it, but I can at least it somehow makes a little bit more sense to me than the people with the Chinese restaurant menu that you were describing earlier. Like, you know, the group I was raised in, the Southern Baptist Church, you know, we hate abortion, but boy, isn't this a cool war? You know, can't make it work.
Exactly. Onward, Christian soldiers.
Kill, kill, kill. I saw a graphic on the internet at some point of Jesus holding a Browning automatic rifle.
Oh,
and it's, you know, it was obviously parody, but there are people for whom Christ is a killing motif.
The Warrior King. And you know, the thing about it is, this is a guy, you know, and let's assume for the sake of argument that he did exist exactly the way the Bible says, okay?
Mm-hmm.
This is a guy who never led an army into combat. This is a guy who never ran a business. This is a guy who didn't make really any money. I mean, he lived his life basically on the goodwill of people, putting him up whenever he went to preach in a town. You know,
yeah.
People would put him up in their house or wherever, you know, he would stay, and people would just, you know, give him food and whatnot. That's how he made his living.
Yeah, and the early church, so this is historical. The early church were communists. They literally were communists. They held all property in common. They lived. They lived in groups. They gathered in groups. They, you know, if you need food, you take food, leave some food for the other guy, contribute food when you can. And they were what they were. And yet, if you suggested that kind of a lifestyle today, you'd be run out of town on a rail for not living democracy.
Exactly. If Jesus was walking around today as if he were walking around back then, you know, the Baptists would be yelling, "Get a haircut, you hippie."
Yeah, exactly. You
know, that's exactly what they'd be doing.
You're absolutely right. Well, Joe, we got to take our break because here in a minute, we got to play you.
Oh, my God.
Always so good to talk to you, man, and a very happy holiday season to you.
Yeah, happy holidays, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, all of that stuff.
All right, thanks.
Take care, Bob.
Take care. Bye-bye. Joe Vecchio, cupofjoe.blogspot.com. And I'm not kidding, we got the Cup of Joe report coming up. Oh, this is fun. It's turning out to... I was filled with trepidation when the show began. And it's just gotten manifestly better. The world is in its proper order. I'm in my chair behind my microphone. My lovely wife is behind the board. God's in his heaven. You know how it goes. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Estrada here. Just like you, I'm really into engines, but there's something else that I'm into even more. Taking care of the planet. I bet you didn't know that motor oil from one oil change dumped in a drain or on the ground can contaminate 1 million gallons of fresh water. That means that if we don't recycle it, we could be drinking it. So take your used oil to your nearest recycling center or call toll-free 1-800-CLEANUP. Remember, if you dump it, you'll drink it.
Want to fight childhood asthma? Then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org, because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
It's the Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. You know, I often wonder what some people are afraid of. For example, why would a heterosexual couple be frightened at the prospect of two gay people getting married? Do they read through newspapers looking for wedding announcements until they find one for gays, then decide they need a divorce? Sounds ridiculous to me. But that's the argument being portrayed by certain, and I'll be polite about what I call them, special interest groups. Then there's the phony war on Christmas, which is being waged primarily by Fox News and Jerry Falwell. Christmas is apparently threatened because some retailers looking to be inclusive during a time of year that includes at least three major holidays prefer to use the term Happy Holidays. Why should that scare them? And again with evolution. Why does it scare some people to think that we're related to chimpanzees and all the other animals? You can make whatever arguments you like about what humans are spiritually, but the evidence is pretty clear that we're made of the same stuff everything else is, just arranged differently. The only people who really should be scared about these things are the people whose power over others is threatened by the truth. Guys like Bill O'Reilly and Jerry Falwell know their livelihoods are built on a house of cards, so their behavior doesn't surprise me. But we shouldn't let their fears infect us. When we allow ourselves to be manipulated like that, we make the world a more dangerous place. And that's something to be scared about. Now, get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show, available via streaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com.
Sticking around. Oh, this feels so much better. thank you, Agnes, for foregoing your day off. I'll find some way to make it up to you. Let's go back to the phones. Jim is with us. He's been waiting. Thanks, Jim. Appreciate it. You're head on.
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
Doing good.
Well, you know, pursuant to some of the conversation that has preceded this one, well, let me start out with this. I think it was Voltaire who once said that if God did not exist, it would be necessary to invent him.
And I tend to agree.
And I think inherently within all men there is a need to have something to worship and something to be on a higher plane. And in the case of Christianity, I will be the first to tell you that, number one, I am certainly no goody-two-shoes, never have been, never will be. And I have never, I guess, have been accused of being a religious zealot. But I certainly have never been accused of being in the ranks of people like Pastor Dobson or Jerry Falwell or people of that nature, because I think that these people are, in their own way, just charlatans. And they are...
I think that's being gentle.
...hurting. Well, I'm trying to be kind here. And, you know, they are hurting the cause of Christianity terribly. And I think that they will pay for it. But... as I said once before, faith is a leap into the unknown.
Sure it is.
Now, I feel better personally. And the way I look at it is this. Any relationship you have with Jesus Christ is a personal relationship. It's highly personal.
I tend to agree.
And it is something in which you are given a great deal of comfort. And you know that there is someone out there who is a lot bigger than you are, who is willing to forgive you and to, you know, 7 times 70 times.
Right. And it has to be personal. I don't believe in, well, it's not a belief. I just don't agree with institutionalization. It started out as and all faiths do, as a personal cult, and by cult I use it in its academic sense. I mean no denigration, but it starts out as a personal cult and it rises toward the ecclesiastical.
But as much as I love cathedrals and beautiful churches and the stained glass and the ambiance of these structures, the kingdom of God is in your heart first.
Right.
And I believe that Christ did come on earth in the form of God being made into the form of a man. And there is a Holy Trinity. And this is something that you either sign on to it or you don't.
Right. There's really not any middle ground.
Now, I'm not going to come over there and try to hunt somebody down who doesn't believe the way I do.
Sure.
I don't want them coming on there hunting me down because I believe the way I do.
Right. I'm real live and let live about all of this.
But, I mean, it's a very personal thing. And, you know, when Christ was on this earth, he said, you know, and these are not exact words, and I'm trying not to misquote the Bible, but he said that basically the birds of the field have a place, or the foxes have a warren, and the birds of the air have a field or a place to lay their heads or to rest, but the Son of Man has not a place to lay his head.
Yep.
And he had nothing, basically, but the clothes on his back. And he had a staff in his hand, probably, and was a very humble individual. And, you know, for God to do that and to make himself into such a creature of humility, that speaks a lot to me, to my heart. And
it makes God more palatable.
Well, it does. And there's a thing here, and I'm trying to, the words are hard to read, but these are just some lyrics to a song. And it says, hold on just a second. I wish they wouldn't print these things like this. But it says, the song is entitled Stay With Me. And it says, you are everything I know, whichever way I go, forever stay with me. Venite Angeli, cantati Domino, laudate. You are with me through it. Whenever I'm afraid, however far away, forever comfort me. You are on my side, whichever way I choose, and everything I do, forever stay with me. Now, to me, that says a lot about the purpose of Christ and his relationship with man. And at late at night, when I'm in my living room on the couch, and I have a brass crucifix, and beneath it there's a votive candle that burns.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at it late at night, and I think, and I know that something's there.
Yeah. Well, that bespeaks the personal nature of the relationship. The institution can't make you feel better. In large part, some like the ritual, some don't like the ritual. But it has to happen inside you. And the thing is, it's not isolated to Christianity either, Jim. And I think we all know that. The transformative aspects can be had by a Buddhist, by a Hindu, by a Jainist. The transformative nature of the introspection itself, absent a deity.
Well, there is
can
one
take
thing,
place.
But there is one thing, though, and it's one thing that he did say. And these were said, as far as I'm concerned, when he was on this earth. And the basic words were these, and he says, and I go to prepare a place for you, and if I go to prepare a place for you, I'll return for you. And one day he will.
Well, the question is in how that happens, I suppose. I appreciate your thoughts. I'm looking forward to seeing this film.
Which film is it?
The name of the movie is The God Who Wasn't There. Brian Fleming was the one who produced it. It's available at thegodmovie.com. You can order it, or you can get it through Netflix. It's an examination of the historicity.
Mm-hmm.
Aspect of it as compared to the religiosity of it. People will believe what they choose to believe.
You mean the historiography of the church?
Well, of the church and of Christ himself.
Well, I mean, you've got so many things that have happened since then. I mean, for example, in this book, The Da Vinci Code. Okay?
Oh, yeah.
Now, take a look at that. Now, there are people who allege that Christ actually married and that his descendants.
Well, and it's not just an allegation.
Are in places in Europe. And then you have the idea of the Holy Grail, and you have the business with the Cathars in the 11th century.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you've had lots of...
Well, there was
there have been lots of councils and lots of things that have happened in ecclesiastical history that have definitely influenced the way people believe today.
Well, for instance...
And it's created a lot of questions, too.
Yeah, The canonization of the idea of the Holy Trinity is a man-made thing. Any canonization is. If you look at the Gnostic Gospels and the Gnostic writings that are contained, it's online at gnosis.org, GNOSSIS.org. Those are the Nag Hammadi texts, and they're very clear on the relationship, for instance, between Mary Magdalene and Yeshua. And they make no bones about it. And they were brutally, they were murdered by the early church. And all of their writings were said to have been destroyed until these things were texts were discovered buried in clay jars in the Egyptian desert.
Now, which texts are these?
They're called the Nag Hammadi texts. They are the Gnostic documents, the Gnostic holy writings. It includes the Gospel of St. Thomas,
mm-hmm.
the Gospel of Peter. There's a great number of them, and you can go and read them, and they're quite fascinating. There was no little C Catholic Church. There was the Coptic Church and the Church that was centered at Jerusalem and the Syrian Church, and on. No real universality. To take an obvious one, the celibacy of the priesthood in the Roman Catholic Church is an invention of man. There's not a not a peep out of Jesus about it.
Well, initially, priests were allowed to marry and to have children, because we discussed this before.
Right.
And I'm not sure which convocation of cardinals, whether it was at Trent or one, there was one in Germany that forbade that. I don't know where it's
at. At one point, the church actually sanctioned the marriage. And I'm not talking figurative, the actual marriage among, like monks. There are paintings of it.
Well, yeah.
They're out there.
And then they realized that, you know, that these people could not have that type of life, that they were going to have to go into these religious orders and basically...
No, I mean they allowed monks to marry other monks.
I've never heard that before.
It's true.
Okay, well, that's the first time for me. But I guess what I'm trying to tell you, and I'm going to leave you let somebody else get on here, is that I'm something of a traditionalist when it comes to these things. And I believe as a little child, I do.
Mm-hmm.
And that is just something that is a part of me that I've been brought up to believe.
Well, and
I hope never leaves me, and I don't think it ever will.
I don't either.
And I just...
I think it serves you well, Jim. Serves you well. You're not using it, you know, you don't use your faith as a cudgel.
No, I wouldn't do that. I would not do that.
Unfortunately,
I've had it used against me as a cudgel, and I've had people, I have been condemned by people who belong to the religious right, and I know exactly what they say. But I know what's in my heart too, and that's the most important thing. And
I tend to agree.
And you know, they can go their way, and they can do what harm, and they can do what they will. But I'm just very glad that I don't have to ask for some stuff that they're going to have to ask for. And I'm just trying to just express a simple act of faith and a simple act of contrition for what sins I commit. And, you know, Bob, I do believe in the communion of saints. And I do believe there are people there who are there to help me. And I do believe in the importance of Mary, the Holy Virgin, because I believe she can intercede for me. And that's just something. I mean, she was born without sin, and she was a person who it was held by great esteem by Christ himself. And,
that's
just something that I accept. And you know, that is part of my church and part of my faith. And I'm not trying to grandstand for it, but
no, I think it's all well taken, and I appreciate your thoughts, and it's grand that we can have that kind of expression and have that kind of dialogue. Unfortunately, there are people who would like to stop it,
okay.
But any way you slice it, we got to hit the break.
Take care,
Jim.
Bye bye.
Bye now. And a quick break, and more of your phone calls when we come back. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Hey friends, Eric Estrada here. Just like you, I'm really into engines, but there's something else that I'm into even more. Taking care of the planet. I bet you didn't know that motor oil from one oil change dumped in a drain or on the ground can contaminate 1 million gallons of fresh water. That means that if we don't recycle it, we could be drinking it. So take your used oil to your nearest recycling center or call toll-free 1-800-CLEANUP. Remember, if you dump it, you'll drink it.
Want to fight childhood asthma? Then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org, because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her. Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Treat me with understanding.
Treat me with respect.
Drug and alcohol addiction is an equal opportunity disease.
Treat me without judgment.
Individuals in recovery come from all walks of life and deserve to be treated with respect for winning one of the hardest battles there is.
Treat me with courtesy.
Treat me with humanity.
Alcohol and drug addiction deserves proper treatment. For drug and alcohol information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Mrs. Deer, you're in the road again.
Oh, Ranger, I saw headlights and...
I understand.
Hey, so you're working late, huh?
Yeah, Smokey and I were up thinking of ways to remind people to be responsible for fires they start.
So what you come up with?
Well, we're going to make some radio commercials featuring a ranger and talking animals.
A little sophomoric, don't you think?
Yeah, so?
Remember, only you can prevent wildfires. A public service message from Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
McGruff the Crime Dog here with my nephew Scruff. Get a pencil and write down an important address. It's for the new McGruff Comic Activity Book.
And it's full of me.
The address is...
Welcome back. About 10 minutes before the hour and straight to the phones. Peter is with us and has been waiting ever so patiently, and I appreciate it. Peter, you head on.
Hey, Bob. It's good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, too.
I'm so glad Agnes came back. You know, a day without Agnes is a day without sunshine, and I'm so glad she's there.
I love you, too, sweetie.
I love you more.
Stop it, okay? Or I'm just walking away from the microphone.
Bob, you're doing a great job. I got to tell you, you're bringing out all the points of view and getting people that have different points of view, and that's great. You're doing your job, but you know, I've just got to take issue with this Brian Fleming guy.
Okay.
And initially, you know, I guess I may sound a little bit Republican by attacking the messenger, but his claim to fame is that he attended two Christian schools and wrote a play called Bat Boy. And a mockumentary about the assassination of Bill Gates called Nothing So Strange. So, in my estimation, he doesn't walk on the stage, but much credibility is my feeling about him. And I
well, I think the proof is in the piece itself. No, I understand what you're saying, but the point is to generate a little bit of dialogue, which is apparently has succeeded.
It certainly has. Well,
I'm conflicted about this.
Well, I understand, and it seems to me that there were two main thrusts that he made, and one was about Mithra. And you have on your forum, the headonradio.com forum, there was a thread that began about Mithra, which I posted to not long ago with posted some information and linked to site, which people with a lot of education pretty much refute the Mithra, that Christianity is Mithra with another outfit on. So I'm not really going to get into the Mithra thing, because if people are interested in going into that depth,
yeah, it's there.
Go to Head On Radio, forum.
Thanks.
But at least if to get my point of view on it. But his other arguments seem to be about Paul, that Paul never refers to Jesus as a real physical person, because of course Paul didn't know Jesus. But the question he puts forth is, Paul never met Jesus. But the question he puts forth is, why didn't he ever refer to him? Well, I argue that he did. In 1 Galatians, he talks about meeting James, the brother of Christ. And in 1 Corinthians 9, Paul says something about that he's, how did he put it? Something about he didn't have a wife, but he was entitled to have a wife, just like the brothers of the Lord are, meaning Jesus' brothers. And in 1 Corinthians 7, he's discussing divorce, and he is trying to explain to people about Jesus' teachings on divorce, and he says, it's not I, but the Lord saying this. So he, in effect, does and refer to Christ. And also, if you look at Galatians again, there's a period of time that Paul talks about he spent 2 weeks with Peter and James, and biblical scholars will tell you that he spent 2 weeks with Peter and James to gather as much information as possible about the life of Christ. I mean, he spent 2 weeks with them downloading all the information he could possibly get.
Well, you know, and he went to Jerusalem and had the big, I mean, I guess it's the earliest real Donnybrook in terms of Christian theology, the big fight about clean versus unclean foods, the fight about whether, you know, new Christians who are adults, the circumcision fight, taken from that perspective, he knew Peter, he knew James. My issues with Paul are ancillary to all of that. There's a lot of this that is it's like the old joke about two blind men trying to describe an elephant. One's got the trunk and one's got the tail.
Yes, I know the story.
And with Christianity, you've got some of that too, because Jethro, who is a listener of the show and a poster there at headonradio.com, a long time back posted a fascinating piece. I forget who the original author was, about ritual customs in the time of Christ. And how we may have just completely misinterpreted everything down through the centuries.
Well, certainly things were written by hand, and we didn't have Xerox machines and printers. But at the same time, the fellow, what was his name again? Fleming says, well, why aren't there other historical references to Christ? We know that Pontius Pilate existed. That's historical.
Right. And Felix.
We know that Caiaphas existed. And all these names are linked directly to Jesus in the Bible. So we have people who are historically referenced, other than the Bible, that are linked to Jesus. So, there's additional proof there. But really, this is my main point. I think he's making I don't know how exactly to put it, but it's some sort of an agenda he's promoting, and here's why I say that. Let's say that all of the things that he is absolutely irrefutably able to prove that Jesus doesn't exist, and that is a fact that he has proven beyond any doubt. What difference does it make? There's plenty of people who believe in God without Jesus. Look at the Jews. And there's plenty of people who believe in Jesus without believing in God. So one does not necessarily lead to the other. And here is my point. If he is going to go through and make the case that Jesus never existed, why does he call the movie the God who wasn't there, not the Jesus who wasn't there?
Well, I think
a huge leap.
Well, I think the title, A, it's catchy as can be.
Well,
two,
marketing.
Yeah, sure.
I'm sorry. I'm just
no, 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 really. But the other part of, you know, the people who hold Jesus up as, I mean, I remember the bumper stickers in the 70s, you know, Jesus is God.
Oh, well, yes. I understand that, but the God who wasn't there seems to have a broader scope than He, in other words, his arguments are that Jesus didn't exist, but he titles the movie The God Who Wasn't There. And my point is, even if he does prove that Jesus didn't exist, what difference does it make? Look at the Jews.
Yeah.
It doesn't really
matter. Well, I mean, if you
but I don't accept that he did prove that.
Well, if you, for instance, Muslims hold Christ out as the last prophet before Muhammad. And in their millennialism or whatever you want to call it, at some point the Mahdi comes back, and most people don't realize the Mahdi isn't Muhammad returning to Earth. The Mahdi is Jesus.
Well, there's so many.
So there, yeah, you're absolutely right when you say that there are plenty who believe this but not that. The Muslims are profoundly they're just horrified by the idea that we would suggest that he is the Son of God. Because God stands alone, and God, you know, there is no God but God, and as a consequence of that, the idea of God making himself corruptible and physical, in human form is just, it's horrifying to them.
Well, I understand, and you know, Bob, you've heard me call in many times raging against the religious right, and while I agree that there are huge and horribly corrupt things going on in Christianity, I don't think the problem is at the roots. I don't think we need to take the axe to the roots. There are some tree limbs that need to come down, and I can add names to them. There are people like Falwell and Dobson and on and on and on and on. The little idiot from the other day who was interviewed, what was his name? He was responding to the big protest yesterday at D.C. where all the liberal Christians were protesting the budget. He says, "Well, I think the Republicans need to do. I think that the tax cuts are the right thing to do because it will free up more money for them to give to what is the word they're calling it? Religious help. What is the word?
The faith-based initiatives?
Yeah, right. As if they're going to donate their money to the
right.
And what was his name? I can't remember. But I just think that people need to be chopping higher up the tree. But nonetheless, I understand that the man has put a lot of thought into it, and I don't dismiss him, except to say that, for me, it didn't click.
Well, if you get a chance and you can rent it through Netflix or whatever.
I already have. I've been to my Netflix. I've put it in the queue.
Okay. Well, you know, I hope you'll provide us with a review afterward.
I'll try not to be hysterical.
Okay, that'll work.
Okay, I'll
Peter, thanks so much. You have a great evening.
Yes, sir, you too.
Take care.
Bye.
All right, wonderful conversation, guys. It's great stuff. Thank you. Let's take a break. This is Head On.
Here with my nephew Scruff. Get a pencil and write down an important address. It's for the new McGruff comic activity book.
And it's full of me.
The address is
Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Hey, Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652. Tells you what to do about guns and about bullies and drugs and about strangers who want to give you a ride.
Scruff, scruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
And it's full of games and puzzles, too. So for your free copy of my new comic activity book, just write
Scruff, scruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Not bad.
Can I do it again?
One more time.
Scruff, scruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
You'll be helping me take a bite out of crime.
A public service message from this station, the U.S. Department of Justice, the Crime Prevention Coalition, and the Ag Council.
On December 8, 1997, our 7-year-old son, Evan, was murdered after signing up for basketball.
It was very devastating. Just very devastating. And the victims program provided the resources for us to get the counseling that we needed.
Alec was also injured. They helped pay for Alex's cornea transplant.
They stood by us through the court process.
If you or someone you love have been a victim of violent crime, there is help available for you.
Crimevictims.gov.
Why should our children learn another language?
Everybody in the world doesn't speak English.
To succeed in this shrinking world, our children will need to communicate in more than one language.
So you could make new friends from different countries.
For our kids' sake, it's time to speak up for language education. Find out how at yearoflanguages.org.
That makes me confident.
Sponsored by the American Council on the Teaching of Foreign Languages.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins next. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Okay, one more hour. And I don't... let's see. Yeah, let's get... Victor sent this to us, and I appreciate it. It's another example of the right wing's willingness to just lie. Oh, yes, dear.
The one thing that I wanted to suggest, it doesn't matter what religion you are, but pick up a book by Robert A. Heinlein called A Stranger in a Strange Land.
A classic.
And read it. And if you're not that crazy about books, pick up the video starring Robin Williams called What Dreams May Come. And it's not about religion. It's about the views about dying. And, you know, it may help you in some way come to terms with whatever that you're grappling with. So don't look at it as that person's a Presbyterian or that person's a Catholic, because we're really all one people. We may not agree on, you know, how it should be, but still, you know, this war on Christmas and everything, there are so many more things that are so much more important than this. Let's focus on the more important things.
Yeah, keep your eye on the ball kind of thing, sure. And of course, that's a nice reference. Stranger in the in a Strange Land is a classic. It's won awards for Robert Heinlein. And the concept in it of Thou Art God is, it struck a real chord with me. If in fact a creator created us, then the divine spark must therefore be within us. And that makes you a little bit of God, if you go in for that kind of thing. You know, you referenced, dear, the issues with death. When you get right down to it, I don't think it's identified as a fear of death, but I don't think most people actually fear death. They fear the manner of their death. You know, the light's on, then the light's out. The candle's burning, then the candle flame goes where candle flames go when they go out.
Guys, death is just like being born backwards.
Okay, that works too.
That's all it is.
That works too. Good suggestion, though. Stranger in a Strange Land. And if you don't have a copy and you want to order one, go to whiterosesociety.org. There's a link. There are links there to a couple of book purveyors. And order through that and help Ben out a little bit. I think, you know, they're generous people, Amazon and Barnes & Nobles or whatever. And I think they give him a penny a book. So help out. If you're going to buy it anyway, buy it there. And remember that. Just go through that portal. What I was saying earlier, the other side, those people, you know, the right, the haters, the killers, the hypocrites, the monsters. I started this theme last night or echoed it from. I don't know if they're stupid or they think we are. And a classic case in point is something that Victor sent to us. Remarks that Sean Hannity job made regarding a donation or an endowment from a Saudi prince. Now, I'm not gonna get on the bandwagon and blow the horn for the Saudis. I don't much like them, not because they're Arabs, but because they are bad for America. They sent 15 out of 19 hijackers were Saudis, and you know, we saw what happened on September 11th. And that's why we're in Iraq. Never mind. But the fella's name is Prince Al-Walid bin Talal. And, of course, he has enough money to burn entire herds of sopping wet elephants. And he has given money to Harvard and Georgetown universities, $20 million each, for their Islamic studies programs. And Hannity, on his program, said, he's a bad man. He's a bad man. Evil man. You know, this is the same guy who tried to give money to the city of New York after 9/11. Tried to give $10 million, and Rudy Giuliani turned it down after he said that, quote, the U.S. needed to, quote, re-examine its policies in the Middle East and adopt a more balanced stance toward the Palestinian cause. Okay? And he had a guest on who said, went to Hannity's question, why would these universities take money from him? The guest said, a fellow named Miniter, said, because these universities already believe this message. They already believe that America is the problem, that our support for Israel and our arguments against terrorism are the problem.
And some professors on these campuses, well, Churchill doesn't teach there. You remember Professor Churchill. But they still do teach at Harvard and at Georgetown. In many cases, they believe this message.
Okay. It was, really, they did. Now, here's the fun part. Here's why I asked the question, are they stupid or do they think we are? Or is it both? Is it a combination? I don't know. Is it a stew? Because, did Hannity not know this? Or did he know and just thinks that is it us that they think are stupid? Or is it more that they know how ignorant the average Fox viewer is? Now, here's the point. This same prince, Al-Walid bin Talal, with all his money, is the largest single minority, and by minority I mean not racially, largest single shareholder outside Rupert Murdoch in Fox. He owns 5.5% of Fox. Period. And yet Hannity said not a word about that. Because, you know, if he did, the mouth breathers and knuckle walkers that watch Fox, well, they might get a little bit upset. Just like Fox doesn't tell anybody about, they don't mention the fact that Sun Myung-moon owns the Washington Times and United Press International and has a significant financial stake in Liberty University, you know, Jerry Falwell University. They don't say anything about that either. Because suddenly that wouldn't seem so palatable. They won't tell about lawmakers gathering to throw crosses in the dumpster at Moon's behest. They won't do that. They won't, you know, or the affair where Moon was given a crown and a robe by a bunch of congressmen. Nope, won't tell you about that either. So I got this little show we do 3 hours a night, and we cuss and carry on, have a little fun, make a little fun of these monkeys. But no. You don't hear about this kind of thing out there in mainstream America. It's real. It's factual. And you do not hear about it. And it should be shouted from the damn rooftops, shouldn't it? Complaining about the endowments for Islamic studies programs at Georgetown and Harvard, but making not a sound about the fact that they are partially owned by the same character. Do you use a word like hypocrite, or do you use a word like idiot? I don't know. Let's take a break. This is Head On.
You put your keys between your knuckles. You walk in well-lit areas. Stay clear of parked vans. Someone approaches you and you cross to the other side of the street. Your cell phone is ready. The numbers for help saved on speed dial. You lock the door behind you. Once, twice, maybe three times. Now you feel safe, secure. You think you've made the right choices to protect yourself. Think again. Because if you're not making healthy choices, you could be one of the nearly 2 out of 3 women killed by cancer, diabetes, heart disease, or stroke. So eat right, get active, don't smoke, see your doctor, and live. Learn to protect yourself from yourself at 1-866-399-6789 or visit us at everydaychoices.org. A message from the American Cancer Society, American Diabetes Association, American Heart Association, and the Ad Council.
Hey, have you got a minute?
Huh?
I'm going to say a word. You tell me what comes to mind. Are you ready?
Okay.
Tchaikovsky.
Gesundheit. Okay, what's the word?
No, see, that is the word. What does Tchaikovsky make you think of?
I don't know. Allergy season?
Hey there, how you doing?
What's up?
Who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker.
No kidding.
Yeah. Before her, there was only soda crackers.
Hard to imagine. Hey, young lady.
Yeah?
Does the name Man Ray mean anything to you?
Duh. The Man Ray is a kind of poisonous jellyfish, and it lives in the Gulf of Mexico.
Aha. Uh-huh.
It's very deadly.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music, Martha Graham's dance, and Man Ray's photography. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
I love Wilco. Great band. 18 and a half minutes after the hour. This is Head On. The phone numbers. Do you know the phone number? Have you written it down? Do you have it tattooed on the back of your neck? 877, the number 4, Head On. 877-443-2366 or 304-658-3333. Email to Bob at headonradio.com or my lovely wife, Agnes, A-G-N-E-S, Agnes at headonradio.com. And I meant to get to this story last night. I didn't, and it's just as well because there's a little follow-up to it. It was broken by our friend Brad Friedman over at bradblog.com. Excellent, excellent source of information if you go and have a look or get on his mailing list, get his breaking news updates. Again, it's what I said earlier, you know, the stuff that isn't out there in the mainstream and won't be out there in the mainstream. Diebold. The fine folks who promised to deliver Ohio for George Bush in the last election, Diebold is in a world of hurt. Their CEO has resigned. Fraud charges have been filed by the SEC. And last but not least, certainly not least, turns out... The machines are everything that we have been screaming about since the year 2000. They are they're monstrosities of vote fraud, pure and simple. Brad writes, AP has finally taken note of the Leon County, Florida hack test. Leon County, Florida got their highfalutin Diebold touchscreen machines out and allowed people to hack it, and they set up a mock election. And it was hacked into, and the results of the election were actually turned the loser to the winner. Just like that.
Does that mean we get Kerry back? Or better yet, Kucinich? Tell me.
Sorry, dear, no.
Bummer.
The elections director of Leon County has vowed never to allow Diebold's machine to be used in another election and has requested funds to replace all of Diebold's voting machines. And Brad notes that though their normal spokesman, David Baer, nominally in charge of lying about things having to do with their voting machines, has been notably missing in action, Diebold has been issuing press releases and sending letters in an attempt to counter and distract from the devastating news of late. And the state of Florida is similarly scrambling to find someone else to blame as well. Now, you remember, Brad Friedman was the guy who broke the story of Clint Curtis, who was requested by his boss and a then speaker of the, I believe, speaker of the Florida House of Representatives, a Republican, was requested to write a program, Clint Curtis was, that would allow election results to be changed without being noticed inside electronic voting machines. Well, now Diebold is shooting back because of the test, and it was a test. Diebold has threatened Leon County's elections director, Ian Sancho. They sent a letter in response to the hack test that said, well, we don't believe the test results, and what's more, it was a very foolish and irresponsible act, and you may have violated licensing agreements. Huh, how about that?
Why is it when someone's caught in the wrong, they always have to become so defensive? I mean, I prefer groveling myself.
Well, that's because you're not a Republican, dear.
Because I can find some sympathy in my heart, well, other than Mr. Cunningham, but... You know, I can take repentance, but threats just make me so upset, and then it makes me want to shove it down their throat and make them eat it.
Well, here's what went down. Now, here's how it happened. One of the tests conducted for Ian Sancho, the researchers got into the system, no problem, made the loser the winner, and they left without a trace. The test was conducted by a fellow named Herbert Thompson. And Thompson also said the machine that tabulates the overall count asked for a username and password, but it didn't require it. I mean, there are 15-year-old bored kids out there who could hack Diebold. Now, in the other test... The researcher who had hacked into the voting machine's memory card was able to hide votes, make losers out of winners, and leave no trace of the changes. Now, you know, the horses are gone, but I think it's probably still worthwhile to close the barn door. Because we've had two rigged presidential elections now. God knows how many congressional elections. God knows how many, county dog warden catcher, dog catcher, whatever, elections that have been. They're just dummied up. It wasn't an election. It was a damn dodge.
No, honey. One rigged, one appointed by the Supreme Court.
Well, okay. Sure. The Florida Secretary of State's office certified these machines as being reliable and honest and so forth. And they're mad at Ian Sancho in Leon County, Florida. The panic is, they are at sweat condition alpha at Diebold. And, you know, look, we're liberals, we're progressive, we're decent people, we're Democrats. You know, we might have a little bit of, yeah, yeah, told ya. But we won't wear it out. Just get the damn things out of our democratic electoral process, please. But the nice thing out of all of this, the Associated Press has finally picked the story up in Florida. And as a consequence of that, maybe someone will pay attention. And the irony of these, we've got a new banner ad running over at Her Herald, HURHERALD.com. A great West Virginia site, really, really well put together and well run and very much an enjoyable an enjoyable browse for you. We've got the ad up over there. And I ran across a story the same day that I was reading Brad's initial revelations about the Diebold hack test. I read a story that Calhoun County, West Virginia, has proudly decided to use Diebold touchscreen machines for its elections. And our Republican Secretary of State, Betty Ireland, just thinks that Diebold machines are the neatest things since sliced cornbread. And I guess if you're a Republican, they are. But, you know, win or lose, of course, I'm a Democrat. But if my candidate loses in a fair and square election, you know, that's my fault. Or the supporters' fault, because we didn't work hard enough to get that person elected. Okay? I mean, that's one way of looking at it. But if he just, if my candidate had it outright taken from him, I can't accept that. We will win or lose in the battle of ideas, but when the other side's ideas are so weak, and they know it, that they have to steal the damned election, then what is... We've got to have a fair process. We must have a fair process. Let's take a quick break. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Hey friends, Eric Estrada here. Just like you, I'm really into engines, but there's something else that I'm into even more. Taking care of the planet. I bet you didn't know that motor oil from one oil change dumped in a drain or on the ground can contaminate 1 million gallons of fresh water. That means that if we don't recycle it, we could be drinking it. So take your used oil to your nearest recycling center or call toll-free 1-800-CLEANUP. Remember, if you dump it, you'll drink it.
Want to fight childhood asthma? Then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org, because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her. Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Downhill to 10. You guys have made it a lot of fun tonight, and I do appreciate that. Let's go to the phones. Fritz is with us. Hey, Fritz, you're head on. How you doing?
Hey, Bob, I'm doing okay. How about yourself?
Pretty good. You staying warm?
Yeah, it's very, very chilly out here. They're talking zero tonight, and talking minus numbers up in Los Alamos. Pretty amazing.
We're getting the dreaded ice warning tonight.
Yeah, I heard that. You're getting that all down the southeast, huh?
Yeah, it's nasty. Yeah, I mean, the power lines just like that. And they're talking half inch ice.
Oh, my God, nothing worse than that.
No, you know, from tree limbs, power lines, everything. It's just nasty.
Hell yeah. I remember that from New England, and that's the one thing we don't get much of out here.
Yeah, you get the nice powdery stuff, don't you?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Yep. Or the bitter cold without anything, which is, you know, a problem, too, because we are water deficient at all times.
Oh, sure.
They're talking about, I think you mentioned it, 20 years Denver being out of water.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's some real problems out here, and they keep developing. Which is one of my issues is that, you know, local politicians don't seem to have the cojones to tell the developers, no, you've got to prove that you've got a source of water before you put up another house.
Well, that just seems to make sense to me.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense, but they don't do it. Anyway, I thought I'd favor you with a little peroration here.
Oh, a peroration?
A pirouetting or whatever, yeah. Whatever. You know, I can't. It's so hard to believe that man went to an Ivy League school and paid attention at all.
Do you think that the chancellor there at Harvard and Yale just cringe every time that's mentioned?
Oh, it's got to be. You know, I've got two classmates. I went to an Ivy League school as well. Neither of those, but I have two classmates in Congress. And you know, they are very, very articulate. And I don't understand what the man was doing for those years. He must have been putting a lot of white powder up his nose. It's incredible.
Oh, yeah.
And, as I was talking to Agnes, I was listening to you talk about this Diebold thing. And, you know, when I hear these stories, I have to admit getting a little bit disheartened about the prospects for, you know, everybody's talking about next year taking the House back, and we obviously have to do that. But, you know, how much of a barrier are we really going to face with these damn machines?
Well, it's not just the machines, though, Fritz. It's the machines and it's the redistricting. You know, the Supreme Court's agreed to hear the Texas redistricting case. And, you know, the whole purpose of redistricting has been to make incumbents safe.
Yeah.
And so you've got to, between now and 2006, I don't know if we can get these machines out of the system. But
no, I don't think we can.
I don't have any confidence in them. Here in Fayette County, West Virginia, I'm going to have to use some sort of electronic I call it voter regulation. If I'm going to vote, short of maybe absentee balloting.
Yeah, that's what I've done here. Actually, the last two elections in New Mexico, I've done absentee by mail.
But the trick with the absentee stuff, though, is, and it's kind of complex, at least here in West Virginia, unless the election the absentee ballots only get counted toward the end of the process.
That's true. Sometimes they get counted late.
Or not at all.
Yeah, I have, to tell you the God's honest truth, I have no absolute confidence that my vote ever got counted in that last election.
And, you know, it's a real Hobson's choice for us because, on the one hand, you know, you go and you participate with one of these electronic voting regulators, and you don't know if you got counted. You don't even know if you voted for the guy you voted for, if it was counted. On the other hand, you try to go absentee, and there's no guarantee that that's counted. And, you know, the other side of that argument, Fritz, is, you know, I'm just going to stay home.
Yeah.
And that's no answer either.
No, it's no answer whatsoever. I mean, the only answer, you know, you would think the answer is getting out in such numbers and winning by such a margin that, you know, there's no way that it can be overturned. But as you pointed out, and as I think it was Howard Dean with Bev Harris that one time where they hacked into a Diebold machine into the central processor, they just flipped it around. You know, you can flip the totals.
Yeah, and that's why you're not going to see, as long as these electronic machines are in place, Fritz, I don't think you're going to see landslides.
No.
You're going to see 51-49, 52-48, because that's, you know, I was a close race. You know, just a few votes made the difference. See how important it is that you go out and vote? That opens that whole meme up.
Exactly. And you know, they have no compunction, no shame at all about, you know, totally countervening the results of polling. Columbus. Columbus, Ohio's newspaper, which has been so incredibly accurate in their exit polling and their pre-polling for the last, you know, 50-some-odd years. They've been right on the money. And in the last election in Ohio's ballot initiatives, where their predictions were totally reversed in the actual voting. It's like, you know, how can this possibly be that this newspaper is so amazingly accurate in that part of Ohio for 50 years and all of a sudden it's not accurate anymore? You know, you have to become suspicious and you have to know that, that the capacity to manipulate is there in spades.
Well, I remember it was several years back, but it was at some sort of a fairly local Texas election in the early days of electronic voting. The vote total came out, or the margin of error or margin of difference between the two candidates came out, and it just happened, and you know, maybe this is coincidence, but numerically it just happened that margin spelled ha 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 ha.
I remember that as well, yeah.
You know, and I have no confidence in it. You got jury duty, you got voting. Those are the two civic responsibilities as far as I'm concerned. And it's no longer, you know, when it's become a parlor trick, it's no longer a civic duty.
Yeah, that's for sure, Bob. Well, you know, as your wife pointed out, we can't leave this to our next generation. We can't leave them an oligarchy. We somehow have to leave them a republic again. I don't know how we're going to do it, but we somehow have to.
All we can do is fight.
Yeah, I wish I had an answer. Got to keep on fighting. Yeah, and And as she also pointed out, those Dems that are kumbaya, it's not going to work anymore.
No. The candlelight vigils can't stop a hacker.
Absolutely not.
Fritz, thanks so much, and you have yourself stay warm and have yourself a great holiday season.
And likewise, Bob.
Bye now.
Bye bye.
That brings something else to mind. When we talk about the electronic voting, we've got to talk about the results that flow from it. The debate over the Patriot Act. Is one of those things. Now, there is a threat out there of a possible filibuster. I believe the vote is tomorrow in the Senate. And yet, we've got people like the Intelligence Committee Chairman Pat Roberts. I loathe him. You know, another bizarre person. I feel so sorry for my liberal and progressive brothers and sisters who live in places like Kansas. It's just the shame must be just crippling when you've got people like Pat Roberts standing up for the Patriot Act and saying, you know, he resents the fact that in what is being put before the Senate, there is a 4-year sunset on provisions of the Patriot Act. And he doesn't like that. He wants to make it permanent. You know, it's the same. The lazy SOBs. You know, why can't you revisit it annually? Screw 4 years. Come back and look at it next year. These things are oppressive to a society that considers itself free, that considers the citizens of the country to be individual sovereigns. Come back and look at it in 6 months. See if it's really, really necessary. And this is, is anybody going to unseat Pat Roberts? I doubt it. You know, there was a statistic out there years ago, even before the 1994 Cultural Revolution, when the Republicans took the House and the Senate, there was a statistic that said it was simpler to unseat a member of the Politburo in the Soviet Union than it was to defeat an incumbent in Congress. If it was that way then, what is it now? Yes, dear.
How long has it been enacted now? 4 years?
The Patriot Act. Yeah, it was shortly after 9/11. So,
do you realize how insidious it is in order to rewrite the Constitution? I mean, if you read the Patriot Act, which reads more like a manual, it's like Every Child Left Behind. If you get into the very depths of it. That's exactly what they're doing. They're taking away your constitutional rights because you can say, oh, well, I'm going to go on this and this is the Constitution. Hey, well, wait a minute. Here in chapter verse on page 3,422, it says, and they've got you, because you know nothing about it. You know the overview.
Well, one of the most heinous parts of the process are these national security letters that I was talking about last night. Or the sneak and peek searches. Under the law as it stands now, law enforcement can come into your home and nose around and poke around, and they don't even have to tell you about it. Now, there's a provision in the modification that says they have to tell you within 30 days or longer if it turns out that that's what they need.
Well, if they do, I want them to load my dishwasher. That's it.
You know,
they can help me out a little bit. If they're going to come in and poke around, then they're going to clean,
no,
too.
No, but seriously, Joe Vecchio brought up the case the other night of the man who is on death row because a cop mistakenly busted into his house and he shot the invader. Or killed the invader. What does it say in the Fourth Amendment? The right of the people to be secure in their persons, places, and effects.
What about the
person's property and effects?
What about the guy that breaks into your house and you shoot him and maim him, and then he sues you?
Well, see, that's one of those tort reform arguments, dear.
Okay, well, see, I'm not going to shoot you to maim you. If you're breaking into my house, then I think you're going to hurt my children or you're going to kill me.
First of all, dear, you must understand that shooting an invader will not give rise to a lawsuit. The cases that are most frequently discussed along those lines, there's one called a guy had a vacant house, it's an old case, and he set a spring gun because he was constantly getting broken in on. He didn't live in the house, he was not protecting life. The rule in everywhere except Texas is that you cannot use deadly force in defense of property. You can use deadly force in defense of self and defense of others, but not in defense of property. But anyway, the point here, you know, sneak and peek searches, and Pat Roberts and so many of his filthy Republican colleagues want to make it permanent. Yeah, we want to make the tax cuts permanent. We want to make the Patriot Act permanent. You know, when you make it permanent, we're done. And he says, well, you know, we could make it permanent. You know, then if there's a problem, we can revisit it. No! It shouldn't be there in the first place. The Patriot Act would not have stopped 9/11. Remember the Phoenix memo? There was an FBI agent out there running around saying, "My God, we've got young Arabic men taking flying lessons for flying jumbo jets, and they don't want to learn how to land." Hello? Talk about a lone voice crying in the wilderness. The Patriot Act wouldn't have stopped that. Competence would have stopped 9/11. Competence.
It's just like Katrina. They were more worried about rolling up their shirt sleeves and being fashion gods than they were about people dying of thirst and hunger and of disease.
Well, and we've talked about this creep in the past. James Sensenbrenner, he's a congressman from Wisconsin. A huge argument, just by living, James Sensenbrenner is an argument that Roe versus Wade was decided a generation too late. James Sensenbrenner, this is the guy who proposed legislation that would make it a felony for you not to inform on someone. We discussed that several months ago. Well, James Sensenbrenner, speaking of the Patriot Act, said the Patriot Act has been a vital tool in the investigation and interception of terrorist activities. Allowing the Patriot Act to expire will be a boon to terrorists because they will be able to use all the loopholes in our legal system that they used here before 9/11. Loophole, schmoophole! It wasn't a loophole. It was damned incompetence by a bunch of Republicans. Just sometimes I worry because you guys are following this stuff, but the Hart-Rudman report on W's desk the day he took office, and it said we have profound lacks of security and breaches of security in America's airport, and something really, really, really awful is going to happen if we don't do something about it. It was shuffled off to FEMA. Hey, Brownie, you're doing a heck of a job. Did you ever think about that? Did you ever think about who it was that got the Hart-Rudman report? Brownie? You know, Brownie was an underling. He was second in command or whatever at FEMA. He was an underling. He got, oh my God, he got the Hart-Rudman report. You're doing a, oh!
Yeah, but you're talking about a guy that can't even get what's going through his ISB out.
IFB?
Sorry about that.
Yeah, the little thing in his ear.
See, gremlin's going again. Yeah. Been up too long.
Little thing in the ear. That works.
Yeah, he can't even get that out right. It's being fed to him.
Yes. This is not a new and improved Patriot Act, said Representative John Conyers of Michigan. God. Now, it makes me crazy when I hear these authoritarian Republicans talking about wanting to clamp down just a little bit more. Just a little bit more. So, you know, our own, the lone dissenting voice against the Patriot Act in 2001 was Russ Feingold of Wisconsin. Now he has some backing behind him, and he has threatened to filibuster. I hope he does. Because if he doesn't, well, we lose a little more freedom. And 4 years from now, when they revisit the sunsets, we'll lose a little more freedom because they'll modify it again. All under the guise of protecting us from the tourists who happened, as we discussed, to strike us because we were on sacred sand in Saudi Arabia. We're not there anymore. They haven't hit us again. They hit London and they hit Madrid because London and Madrid were participating in our war on Islam. And, you know, you can hear the little right winger.
See, he said it's a war on Islam. It ain't a war on Islam. The dear leader done said it ain't a war on Islam. It doesn't matter what he says. They don't believe him.
Perception is reality. And they perceive it as a war on Islam. And as long as that's how they perceive it, that is what it is. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Hey friends, Eric Estrada here. Just like you, I'm really into engines, but there's something else that I'm into even more. Taking care of the planet. I bet you didn't know that motor oil from one oil change dumped in a drain or on the ground can contaminate 1 million gallons of fresh water. That means that if we don't recycle it, we could be drinking it. So take your used oil to your nearest recycling center or call toll-free 1-800-CLEANUP. Remember, if you dump it, you'll drink it.
Want to fight childhood asthma? Then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her. Okay, but how?
Just don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, there you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Treat me with understanding. Treat me with respect.
Drug and alcohol addiction is an equal opportunity disease.
Treat me without judgment.
Individuals in recovery come from all walks of life and deserve to be treated with respect for winning one of the hardest battles there is.
Treat me with courtesy.
Treat me with humanity.
Alcohol and drug addiction deserves proper treatment. For drug and alcohol information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Mrs. Deer, you're in the road again.
Oh, Ranger, I saw headlights and...
I understand.
Hey, so you're working late, huh?
Yeah, Smokey and I were up thinking of ways to remind people to be responsible for fires they start.
So what'd you come up with?
Well, we're gonna make some radio commercials featuring a ranger and talking animals.
A little sophomoric, don't you think?
Yeah, so?
Remember, only you can prevent wildfires. A public service message from Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, State Forester, and the Ag Council.
McGruff, the crime dog, here with my nephew Scruff. Get a pencil and write down.
Hard rains are gonna fall. What did you see, my blue eyes, sir? What did you see, my darling young one? I saw a newborn baby with white wolves around. It's all a highway of diamonds.
Okay, a few minutes left in the show, and from the say good things about people who do good things department, the best man in Congress, Dennis Kucinich, issued a press statement after Dear Leader's speech yesterday where he said, "I take responsibility." This is what he said, and I quote, "The United States went to war not because of faulty intelligence, but because the Bush administration manipulated intelligence to mislead the public and to establish a pretext to attack a nation which did not attack us." The president, who has given a series of reasons for the war in his latest in a series of speeches promoting the war, now says 1,000 days after the invasion, it was about getting rid of Saddam Hussein. Not about WMDs, because there were none. Not about Iraq obtaining uranium from Niger, it didn't. Not about Iraq's connection to 9/11, because there was none. Not about Iraq's connection to Al-Qaeda and 9/11, because there were none. Love this man. The president now says he is responsible for the war in Iraq. I agree with the president. He is responsible. He is responsible for attacking a nation that did not attack us. He is responsible for the 2,151 American troops killed in Iraq. He is responsible for the 15,881 U.S. troops injured in the war. He is responsible for at least 30,000 Iraqi civilians killed. We know it's more than 100,000. Since the start of the war, he is responsible for draining $250 billion from U.S. taxpayers to pay for the war, and he is responsible for the failed reconstruction, and for the continued occupation. I am glad to see the president, 1,000 days late, is prepared to admit mistakes. He still has one more admission to go, that our continued occupation in Iraq is counterproductive and needs to end quickly. Well, I'll add one more thing, Congressman Kucinich, because you're too decent and dignified to... There's one other thing that needs to end quickly. And that is the administration of George Walker Bush. Now, before the Homeland Security guys come after me, I'm not talking about anything illegal or violent. I'm talking about the impeachment of George W. Bush and his removal from office for his high crimes and misdemeanors against the people of the United States, the Constitution of the United States, and, in fact, the people of the world. That is a necessity. What's the name of that organization? WorldCan'tWait.org? .com, not sure. They're right. The world can't wait. We can't wait till something has got to start, and it's got to start happening now.
Start it any way you wish. Talk to your neighbors. Talk to the people in the grocery in the line at the grocery store. Talk to the guys at the gas station. But we have a moral obligation to begin the process that will remove George W. Bush from office. It's that simple. With the exception of the first hour, the show tonight was produced by my lovely wife, Agnes. I mismanaged the first hour. The show, as usual, was announced by Brian Reznor. Randy Kerbway was the engineer that set up the studio for us. Our good friend Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org maintains the stream, maintains the archives of this and many other wonderful liberal talk radio programs. Remember, if you got any book buying to do for holiday purchases or any other reason, go through the portals there at WhiteRoseSociety.org and help Ben out a little bit. And, of course, the show is brought to you every night by the West Virginia Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you.